Hey, check it out, people. We're going to just hold off for a moment. We got our Rosa Clemente is on the line with us. This is the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party for the upcoming election next Tuesday. Rosa, thank you for joining me here.
Thank you for having me.
An absolute pleasure. Rosa, I want to congratulate you. This is actually a very historic moment here in this country. You, the Green Party vice presidential nominee, and Cynthia McKinney, the Green Party presidential nominee, two women of color, are both running together on a major party ticket for the highest level of the executive branch. So, you know, big shout out to you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And this is also a historic moment, I think, for other reasons, of course. We're, again, as I said, about a week away from a presidential election. And, I mean, to say the absolute minimum about the neoconservative presidency of the Bush-Cheney administration, it's been one of probably the most brutal, lethal, and criminal regimes on this planet ever. And certainly, they've given us a lot of fodder to criticize them, but I don't think we really should spend too much time doing that. Rather, I think they're just a symptom of a much larger issue, and I think we have time to talk about that. So I think there's a lot of things we could talk about. I mean, where could we start? Should we start with our voter disenfranchisement in Puerto Rico, maybe multiple simultaneous illegal aggressive wars, Palestine, political prisoners, the prison industrial complex, the death penalty, the military industrial complex, homelessness, indigenous rights, health and welfare, corporate media, or how about hip-hop and the NHHCP? How about we start there, or the PC, rather?
And there were about 15 people who came together in 2003. And in 2004, we had the first ever national hip-hop political convention. And there's been two subsequent ones since then. I'm not really involved in that organization, so I really can't speak for what they're doing right now.
You are, and you have been working with the hip-hop movement in this country and this culture for a very long time, have you not?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, people probably don't know my background, so I think that people just need to know I'm 36, and I grew up in the South Bronx, and then grew up in Westchester County, near, right next to Rockland County, and went to school in upstate New York at Albany, and then got my master's at Cornell in 1998, and I've been doing community organizing and hip-hop activist work. I also am a journalist. Not right now while I'm on the campaign trail. I can't do a show or anything. But I had a show on WBAI in New York City, if you guys are in Poughkeepsie, right, in Bastrop. I know a lot of people listen to 99.5 FM. And I did a radio show around the prison industrial complex, every kind of facet of it, which led me to make this run with the Green Party and Cynthia McKinney.
Mm-hmm. And Cynthia McKinney, of course, was a six-term congresswoman from Georgia, and she has been, I spoke with her a couple of months ago, and she had basically said that for a long time she had pretty much always had Green Party values, but was not a Green Party member. And I think if we all take an honest look at our values system, we find that we probably mostly align with the Green Party value system, except most of us are not registered as Green Party voters, which is in fact an international organization. So maybe you could talk a little bit about Green Party values.
Well, the Green Party stands on four principles, four pillars, and it's grassroots democracy, social justice, ecological wisdom, and economic sustainability and peace. So, you know, there are a lot of Green Party members. There are a lot of Democrats who I'm sure have Green values, and some Republicans. But, you know, I think that I don't come from that electoral political background like Cynthia McKinney does. So I don't really have an affinity towards I never really had an affinity towards voting as just a thing you do once in a while. So within that context, that's why the Green Party is important, because it's not just about two of us running. There's 248 Greens running for offices all over the United States, including a really possible governorship in West Virginia right now over the mountaintop removal process. But for me, I'm trying to build a movement. I'm not trying to you know, wait for elected officials to do the right thing. They've proven that 98% of the time they will not do the right thing. And I don't have illusions of what's going to happen in 2008. So when it comes to, like, understanding the Green Party values, yes, a lot of people share them, but that's not enough. It really takes people to put in work after they vote or grassroots organizing. And so that's how I kind of look at the Green Party and trying to also kind of reinvent a little of it that speaks more to black and brown and white working class youth generation in this country.
You know, the Green Party is often referred to as an alternative party or a third party, and I think that kind of language is as you mentioned, a defeatist sort of attitude, and you've coined the phrase, I believe, that the Green Party is the imperative party. So maybe you could address that, and you know, I pointed out in my introduction for you is that the Green Party is really a major party because I think, again, as most people align with the Green Party, so talk about the Green Party as the imperative party. We live in New York State here, and it pretty much is beyond the statistical probability of error that Barack Obama will be elected, at least get the electoral votes from New York. And there's a wide margin of error so that maybe the 5% of the population that would need to get the Green Party as a major party status could actually take place here. So, you know, is a vote for your conscience a wasted vote, essentially, is the question.
Well, it's not even a vote for your conscience. It's a vote for good public policy. You know, it's not like the Green Party should be viewed as a symbolic left kind of thing or, excuse me, a moment. I mean, you know, so I think as it pertains to what we're trying to achieve 5% of the electorate nationally in the national election, and then each state will have a different process where hopefully we will be we'll continue to gain permanent ballot status so we don't have to petition to be on the ballot for congressional elections or major elections. But even state elections will force to petition for certain offices. So that is definitely, you know, one of the main goals of the Green Party. When I said that the Green Party is not an alternative, it's an imperative, that's just right, I thought about that right after I got the nomination, because in this country, alternative is always seen as, it's actually, alternative is now marketed, so it's more seen like crazy, disorganized, like young people just rioting or anarchists. Like that's what, they have used that language to portray what alternative is. And when I was thinking about it, to me, it's not about doing something different for a little while and then coming back to then coming back to what you were doing before you made an alternative. I was more, this is about our lives at the end of the day. And this is about particularly the lives of young people in this country and the lives of other young people around the world that have to deal with American imperialism, capitalism, and foreign policies that are predicated on preemptive war. So for me, it is an imperative if we're going to live on this planet. And that means how we govern ourselves, how we politicize ourselves, how we act, what our values are, and right in concert with actually saving the planet from environmental destruction. You know, and I think that's why I said that it is an imperative. Right now, at least, I think for people who think like me, and there's a lot of us, I think, in this country.
As the vice presidential nominee, what do you think the responsibilities of the vice president are, and in what manner would you intend to be engaged in those responsibilities?
Well, I think me and Cynthia have a understanding that I was brought to the table to deal with you and also how we relate to young people all over the world. So, you know, the governmental kind of executive role to being vice president. Like, you get a tie and all this. And pretty much that's one of the main things, breaking literally the Senate tie, not making legislation, as I've alluded to. The executive should not be making decisions, and that's been the problem the last 8 years, with the executive and legislative intertwined literally in bed together over everything. You know, it also is about if the president does not live for whatever reason, you have to be ready to step up into that position right away. And I do not like anything personally or politically about Sarah Palin, but one thing that she did say at the beginning was that the minute that John McCain asked her, she was like, yeah, I'm ready. And that's exactly was my response. And I think that does take someone that has, like, ambition and has a modicum of self-confidence. But the differences between me and her would be I'm also a humble human being, and I'm also, I would assume, more intellectual than she is from what I've seen out there. So, you know, that's what the vice president is supposed to do. It's supposed to also be the backup for the president. You know, I would go, like redefine the role as more it being you're the person on the ground, on the, like, local community level, as much as you can be, right? Because the president is basically not able to just be going into communities every day of every week of every month. But that has to happen. And, you know, that's something that I would look into. Like, I always thought, given this position, I would open up a department of community activism and organizing and trickle up the solutions that community organizations have, and then they can help create and define the public policy, and then there is the government to step in and build the infrastructure and fund what we call public good works, you know. So that's kind of the way I would envision what I would do.
Mm-hmm. I think probably one of the most critical issues in terms of foreign policy and in terms of human rights is represented by what is taking place in Palestine. And even in this country, we've just seen eight activists were arrested and are now being charged with domestic terrorism. So I just was wondering, you know, Green Party platform and your personal take on basically human rights and the violation therein of the Palestinian peoples.
Well, in our platform, we go by a one-state solution, and that's the solution that the Palestinian people and activists have been talking about ever since the Israeli government was illegally formed and moving everything back to the pre-1967-64 war. I know I got my years mixed up, but it's that war where Israel literally invaded Palestine. So, you know, one-state solution, and that's been pretty much how the other world leaders have seen it as the to solve the situation and a return. All Palestinian people should have that right of return to come back into their homeland. So, you know, we don't pontificate on that one that much, because it's pretty clear we're on the right side of that one, and that's what the Palestinian activists have been putting forth, and that's what we've adopted in the Green Party. And that's how me and Cynthia would come to the table. Or, you know, if the Green Party hadn't adopted that, we would be right there, mm-hmm. making sure that that platform, that point was in the platform.
Right. The Green Party has done some miraculous work in this country in getting the word out, but still there's been just a series of whiteouts and blackouts in the media of the Green Party. So, how is it, you know, maybe just address the issue of those blackouts and whiteouts of the Green Party and the difficulty that you've had in getting the word out of the Green Party.
Well, I've been working around media justice for the last 6 years, so I was pretty clear that we weren't going to get covered by the mainstream press. You know, I don't have illusions of that anymore. What was a little bothersome and a little bit disheartening was the progressive and the left media in the country, and even what we call independent media. Not the Independent, which is a newspaper in New York City, or Indie Media, which I've been part of in the past. It's more about there are some really great progressive voices and organizations out there that or journalists from Alternate to the Huffington Post, to the Nation, Political.com, Salon.com, Saloon.com. You know, and unfortunately, they've fallen into that media hype of, you know, only covering two candidates, and they should know better, you know, because these are people that talk about media justice and media reform, but are, you know, they also have things that they want to accomplish, apparently, as many of them are nonprofits. And that might not be letting the everybody in America know that there are these other parties that exist. Our party exists, the Libertarian Party exists, the Independent Party exists, there are six people running for president, six people running for vice president, and also not being able to participate in the debates because the President's Commission, which is a organization that was founded after the Lyndon Johnson administration, they only allowed for the two parties to debate. The last time we saw a third-party candidate was when Ross Perot was able to have enough money to get in the polls so that he would poll high enough that he had to be let into the debates with Clinton and, I guess, Bush, George Bush, the first one. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's the hardest part about it. But then, on the other hand, we do 10 radio shows a day, and there's many articles, there's a lot of international press we've garnered, and no matter what, we've made history too. So, you know, I think because I have such an intimate understanding of the media, I'm okay with that. You know, I'm not okay though with journalists who have shirked their duties, and I write about that, and that's what I'm going to really look at after this election, the amount of coverage that we didn't get, and if we did get that coverage, we would be a force to be reckoned with. We'd be polling, you know, so would probably the Independent Party be polling pretty high right now. Mm-hmm. Because people are tired of just having two choices. You could tell there's an excitement, of course, you can't deny that, but there's also a thing like, well, he's better than that other one. It's like that lesser of two evils is now coming back to play, and our generation is dealing with too many ills to be dealing with the lesser two evils anymore. Mm-hmm.
Indeed, absolutely. You've been a community organizer for quite a long time. You got your graduate degree up at Cornell. You've been called a revolutionary by a number of people. And I think that, you know, in this week before the election, what do you have to recommend for people? Where should people be setting their actions and intentions coming up to this election and these last brutal 8 years of a rogue regime?
Well, yeah, I don't, you know, I appreciate that people call me revolutionary, but, you know, I don't think I've achieved that yet, and that's okay, because I don't think that revolution is going to come in any type of modicum of reform or you know, like, you become a revolutionary when you participate in a revolution. I'm not participating in a revolution right now, you know, and I think that is as honest as I can be. You know, that's not something an elected official is ever going to tell you. But, you know, people have to realize that we're right now in such a crisis. Like, we don't even have community right now. We have environments where people can't relate to each other, can't talk to each other. We have so many economic ills in this country right now. And people are losing hope. And that's kind of where this message of hope and change resonates. But in order for any of that to even happen, we have to have a revolution in this country. And that can mean many factions, but it definitely has to mean that by the next presidential election, the Democrats and Republicans are going to have to be parties of the lessers at that point. If we don't achieve that, we're going to be in a really bad situation. So, like, what I encourage people to do is, if you're going to vote, then vote, but the work also continues the next day. Pushing a button does not make you an organizer or an activist or on a road to a revolution, you know. And I really encourage people to listen to Malcolm X's speech, The Ballot or the Bullet, where you can hear that speech now and think he's talking to us right now in 2008. And we have to understand that history repeats itself, and we're in a cycle right now of how the 60s looked in terms of the oppression that people were feeling. We're in a different time, and we have better mechanisms to organize, but at the end of the day, we have to be in our communities and be really building change locally. And that includes organizing, that includes electoral politics, that includes all of it. So, you know, for me, this election day is going to be a monumental one for me personally, and I think it's going to be a historical one in many, many ways. But, you know, November 5th is the day after, and I'll be out there working within community and activism and trying to finally get the hip-hop generation the respect that is due, but also the public policy that it needs and the kind of country that it wants. Mm-hmm.
Rosa Clemente, I've posted a link to one of your videos, one of your speeches up on radioactivelunch.com. I think people should go there, and of course they should just go to Google and YouTube and type in your name, and they should spend a couple of days before this election, especially since New York is pretty safe if people have to vote strategically.
New York is very safe. We're on the ballot. You'll see our names on there. New York is definitely going towards Obama, which means that people can vote really consciously in their values in New York. They can go to VoteTruth08.org or GreenPartyGP.org, and then we're accepting YouTube videos. We hope that people send us pictures of the polling booths. And lastly, we'll be on the ground starting Monday over voter integrity. We have already mad issues going on, people's votes not being counted, people waiting in lines, people being purged off the rolls. So I'm encouraging young people, especially in colleges, take your camera, videotape, see what's going on. If they offer you a provisional ballot, refuse it and have one of the board of electors on the phone so that they can send somebody so that your vote will count that day. Mm-hmm. So thank you for having me on the show.
Thanks so much, Rosa Clemente. We'll speak with you again soon, and the best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Definitely take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And of course, that was Green Party Vice Presidential nominee Rosa Clemente. One of the things I enjoy so much about her, and again, watching the other third parties and the other Green Party candidates, is, you know, they're dressed like us, they speak like us, they think like us, they talk like us, and you know, that's who we should be voting for in this country.